Right now, we're joined here in the studio by a very special guest, filling in for Anna Richards this week of the Chapel Hill Carbor NAACP. We have James Williams, who we have talked about a great deal on the air in the last weeks. He just stepped down after a long career as Orange and Chatham County's public defender. James, good to be with you today.
Thank you, Aaron. It's good to be here.
So how is retirement going?
Retirement is going well. It's been, tomorrow will make 1 week that I have been officially retired, and it's been a busy several days, mainly because of, you know, committees and other events that I had on my calendar that I still participate in, but I'm doing it at my own pace, and so retirement, I think, is going to be great.
That's good. How did you feel about the ceremony last week? I know there's so many people who turned out and had such great things to say about your career.
Well, it was almost overwhelming, but in a good way. It brought up a lot of emotions. You know, when you're there to acknowledge not just your work and your impact, but also you it's brought clearer that you are leaving a group of people that have meant so much to you and to your career and to the community and society, and that are those hardworking assistant public defenders and support staff. That's almost like a family. And so there was a lot of emotions swirling within me as that ceremony unfolded. But it was a lovely thing.
Yeah, and I know you're still going to be active in retirement as well,
oh,
right?
Yes, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, I got up Thursday morning and had to be in Raleigh for a 10 o'clock meeting on an excessive cost and fees committee. And then I turned around the next day, had another meeting in Raleigh, the North Carolina Commission on Racial and Ethnic Disparities in the criminal justice system. And Saturday was filled with, of course, there was a legislative town hall, and then our local NAACP, our regular chapter meeting, was on Saturday. So it's been pretty busy.
You start wondering how you were able to fill an actual job the whole time, right?
Well, working a lot of nights and weekends,
yeah,
basically,
oh,
is how I was able to get it done.
Well, we're speaking with James Williams, who again was Orange and Chatham County's public defender, just stepped down. So let's talk about the justice system. You have lived that for 30 years and more. What do people need to know about the justice system, the way it functions, the way it ought to function, versus the way it actually does, that people may not necessarily be aware of?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that people, I think, need to be aware of, and probably are becoming more aware of, is just the immense size and footprint that our criminal justice system has on society today. And that footprint does not come without a cost. You know, I was just looking at some numbers as it relates to North Carolina, for instance. You know, there are close to, you know, 40,000 or so people in prison or jails, in prison in North Carolina. And I think last year, 2016, 23,000 people were released from prison, and of course their slots were filled with additional people. The reason that I mention that is that those 23,000 people coming out, one has to wonder, what is their likelihood of success of actually coming out of prison after serving, quote, their time and trying to reenter back into society? So many people come out of our criminal justice system unable to get work, unable to find places to stay, unable to get government benefits, things of that nature. And so the recidivism rate is extremely high. And it's not because people are inherently bad, it's because once you've had that criminal justice contact, it damages your opportunities for a future success in life. And I think we have to do a better job at not only downsizing the criminal justice system. I mean, our system, it should be probably 50% or more smaller than what it actually is. Mm-hmm. But also making sure that, that people are not permanently locked out of society based upon a mistake that they may have made at some point in their past. And that's really what's happening now, that people need to understand that it's not just the people who are in prison or jail, but the millions of others. There are like 1.5 million people, for instance, in North Carolina who have a record of some sort. And we need to think about what we are, the continual punishment that those people have to undergo simply because they have a record, and figure out better ways to help them, quote, reenter into society. So generally speaking, I'd like to see our R's change. I mean, I think too much of our criminal justice system is about revenge and retribution, and I would like to see more emphasis placed on reintegration and revival and renewal, for instance. So that's both a cultural change and concept, and also putting resources where they need to be. Mm-hmm. So in a nutshell, those are some of the things that but also the thing that really compelled or persuaded me to become more involved in trying to, address some of the systemic problems related to race and criminal justice is the racial inequities within our system. And one thing that is very disturbing is the fact that practically every gain that was made during the civil rights era is being undermined by a highly racialized criminal justice system. We could kind of intuit this, but there have been a number of studies. In fact, one of the more recent books that I think everybody should read is a book by a sociologist by the name of Becky Pettit. It's called Invisible Men, Mass Incarceration, and the Myth of Black Progress. And I won't go into all the details of the book, but she basically shows out using data that practically any area, whether you're looking at housing, whether you're looking at education, whether you're looking at employment, we know that gaps exist, but she says that those gaps are understated because they don't include those black men, for instance, who are in prisons or jails. They're not counted. So once you count them, if you're talking about unemployment or if you're talking about education, you see those gaps get much larger. So I guess the nut, in summary, what I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of work still to be done as it relates to criminal justice reform. And we have begun to do some things here in the state of North Carolina and here locally. And there were some things that had begun nationally before the most recent election. And I think, at least locally and on the state level, I think those efforts will continue. I don't know. It may be take another election to change things on the federal side of things.
We're speaking with James Williams, and you mentioned a lot there. I want to talk about the recidivism rate and the extent to which you go to prison, you have a criminal record, and that follows you wherever you go. There's obviously Ban the Box legislation, which mm-hmm. is a movement that's sort of growing nationally to at least make it so when you're applying for jobs and applying for housing, you don't have that actually on the form that you're filling out. What else can be done in order to mitigate that effect of having that record trailing behind you even after you've served your time?
Well, Ban the Box, for instance, is one of the things that can be done locally. Mm-hmm. And, in organizations and entities within Orange County, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Hillsboro, and Orange County itself, have banned the box. But then, there's still more that can be done to... No, we can't. Municipalities and counties can't order private businesses, for instance, to ban the box. But I'm hoping that we can do more to at least encourage private businesses to do more of that. There are some things that need to be changed legislatively. Some of the so-called collateral consequences, for instance, a number of businesses, there are thousands of businesses that people cannot get licenses for if they have a criminal record, even though the record has nothing to do with the business or, you know, job that they might want to get. Our legislature needs to do a better job at looking at those antiquated statutes and removing, you know, a number of those consequences that serve no useful purpose, you know, either in terms of safety or for society in general. Another is, you know, the ability to get expunctions is fairly strict in North Carolina. I think there's some things that can be done there. But the other thing is, one of the things that North Carolina likes to promote that is done successfully is justice reinvestment. Without going into all the details, has resulted in fewer people being sent to prison in the state of North Carolina. And the idea behind justice reinvestment, that money that is saved by fewer people being in prison and costing the state of North Carolina, you know, something like, I believe, like $200 million or so, less than what it would have paid without justice reinvestment, that money be reinvested into community programs where, the results of investing that money would reduce criminal activity and recidivism, because you could have things like after-school programs and jobs for kids and training and more, you know, substance abuse programs and things of that nature. Unfortunately, that money has not been, quote, reinvested. As I understand it, a lot of those savings simply been shifted back into the general fund. And that's a travesty, and that needs to change. So those are some of the things that could help, address this recidivism. I think one of the studies that we see is something like 40% of people who are released from prison recidivate. I think that is a term.
Yeah, but it is now. Yeah.
Right, it is now. But
is that getting worse, or is it getting better? Is it
well?
Not
I don't
changing?
Know that it's getting worse, but it certainly doesn't appear to be getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are some common sense things that can be done that could improve that. And some of the things that I just mentioned are some things that could help. The other thing, Aaron, is that we've got to figure out a way that, as a society as a whole, see, it shouldn't just be, you know, people within the legal community or criminal justice stakeholders or even county commissioners, let's say, who are concerned about this. The general public needs to have much more concern and empathy. And I think that's one of the things, if we're going to see some of the significant progress that we hope to see over the years, there's just going to have to be more empathy from the general public on the issue of criminal justice reform. And how we go about doing that, I mean, I think there are some of the things that, you know, we've been trying to do locally, some of the NAACP and some of the other groups that I've worked with, like, you know, screening documentaries, for instance, and having panel discussions following that and sort of exposing people to, you know, some of the ills of the system and the unnecessary toxic effects of it, and how, as a society, we can both be safer and more humane and more true to our democratic aspirations and principles by making some of these modifications. But if people don't care, and sometimes they don't care simply because they don't have the necessary knowledge, but until we close that empathy gap, it's going to be difficult, really, to reform the system the way it needs to be reformed.
That almost seems generational, right?
Well, it's not going to be a short-term thing, but we know that we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it may have to take incremental steps. But it was incremental steps that got us into this mess. I mean, one of the things that boggles my mind is, you know, I think I've mentioned, you know, when I graduated from undergrad school in, I think it was 73. And in 1973, there were approximately 200,000 people in prisons or jails in this country. And so we go from 1973 to 2013, and you got 2.5 million. Now, that didn't happen overnight. There were decisions that were made by bureaucrats that was permitted by an electorate that allowed that to happen.
And encouraged, probably, by an electorate. Tough on crime and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen overnight, and it's not going to change overnight. But I think there are some fundamental things that we can do to begin that process to get us to where we need to be. I mean, when you look at the crime rates now are lower than they've been since probably, you know, the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the prison population is steadily constant or in some cases going up. And so there's no way that you can justify what's happening because, you know, we have to do it to stay safe. I mean, as the crime rates have gone down, we have continued this sort of incarceration fetish that we've been on, and it's time for us to get. And so, you know, when we look at where we are, we are an anomaly. I mean, there's never been anything like the criminal justice apparatus of the United States in the history of the world. And so we stand out, and not in a good way. We are exceptional, but in a very bad way, And what makes it worse is that it's unnecessary. I mean, if there was some necessity for it, then maybe one could, but it's totally unnecessary and is counterproductive, so it doesn't make sense on a number of levels.
I want to keep talking with you for 2 hours, but we got to let you go. James okay. Williams, just retired as Orange and Chatham County Public Defender. Thank you so much for being here, for all the work that you've done, and for everything that you're continuing to do even now.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.